On the Michael Medved Show, your daily dose of debate, where it's easy to save 15% or even more on car insurance with GEICO. You just go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. A great pleasure, as always, to speak to Speaker Newt Gingrich. He, of course, was third in line to the presidency for some very productive years and worked together with President Bill Clinton to actually steer the country to not just a balanced budget, but to a budget that actually showed a surplus very briefly. Speaker Gingrich, great to speak to you.
Well, Michael, it's great to be back with you and to have a chance to chat with your audience.
Well, and by the way, I should mention that Newt's new book, he is one of the most prolific writers out there, which has been drawing rave reviews from everybody, including James Carville, by the way. His new book is called Victory at Yorktown. It's part of a series of books telling in novelistic and exciting fashion the inspiring story of the Revolutionary War. And I think a lot of conservatives right now could use some inspiration. Newt, on a very different struggle, you had some of the same issues with President Clinton that Speaker Boehner is facing with President Obama. You were able to work it out for the country's benefit. What do you think are the prospects for actually avoiding this fiscal cliff and then making progress to seriously reduce the deficit?
Well, I think it's very important for Speaker Boehner to look at what Speaker O'Neill did in 1981 in response to Ronald Reagan. The situation was very similar. Reagan had control of the Senate, but not of the House. Reagan had a pretty good-sized victory, bigger victory than Obama had. And O'Neill took the position that he would cooperate but not compromise, that they would offer a Democratic Party solution in the House, and they would offer the right to have a vote on a Reagan alternative. And the minority leader, Bob Michael then, it would be Nancy Pelosi now, would have the right to craft that alternative and see if they could get a majority. But they didn't try to work out some kind of O'Neill-Reagan deal because the gap was too big. And I'm very concerned that House Republican leaders may get drawn into some kind of a compromise policy where they inevitably end up with Obama's taxes and Obama's spending, and they split the Republican Party. I think it's a very dangerous process. I think they'd be much better off to say, let's try to work something out. We're going to tell you what we favor, and we will give you the right to see if you can find 30 or 35 Republicans to vote with the Democrats for an alternative if you think there is a better alternative. But I just think it's very hard once you start down a road of agreeing to some kind of compromise with somebody as stubborn as Obama. You get dragged further and further to the left towards higher and higher taxes and more spending.
There's increasing talk that the Democrats, led by Senator Patty Murray and now a bunch of others, are actually willing to plunge the country off the fiscal cliff with the idea that once everybody starts paying higher taxes, then they come back and say, okay, now we want tax cuts for the middle class, and they'll get enough Republican support to abandon the party and to cooperate with them. Do you think that's a serious possibility?
Well, I think almost anything's a possibility right now. The Senate became more radical. The failure of the Republican ticket in the Republican campaign meant that Massachusetts moved to the left, Wisconsin moved to the left. I think you have to assume that we're going to have and Indiana moved to the left. So I think you're going to have to assume that the Senate under Harry Reid will be even worse than it was the last 2 years. And I think for the moment they're feeling their oats. They feel like they won the election, although the truth is there were two mandates. There's a Democratic mandate for president, and there's a Republican mandate for the House. And we need to remember that it's a question of two mandates being negotiated, not just one mandate.
There are a number of conservatives, led, I guess, by Bill Kristol, who say that Republicans, quote, shouldn't fall on their sword to protect relatively modest tax rates. I actually won't even say relatively modest. 35% is not relatively modest. But to protect current tax rates for wealthy people. Do you think that Republicans should show some give on that issue, Mr. Speaker, or should draw a line?
Well, the first thing I'll do is figure out all the various really bad spending programs that could be cut without having to raise taxes. The second thing they ought to do is look at the study that was done by Noble Royalties, which is the largest oil and gas royalty company in the United States. They estimated that if we managed federal land the way we'd manage a private family property, we'd get $760 billion in royalties and $1 trillion in tax revenue over the next 20 years without raising it a penny by simply becoming the leading oil and gas producing country in the world. So there are a lot of options you could offer and put on the table. And then the question becomes, if we could meet the president's goals without raising taxes, why is he just so determined to raise taxes? And why would Republicans want to give in to him?
Well, see, it seems to me that he's sending all kinds of signals today about preferring confrontation to cooperation. I mean, you've surely seen the reports that he's planning to or considering appointing John Kerry, defense secretary, and appointing Susan Rice as Secretary of State, the same U.N. ambassador who was out there with that story about the video being the cause of the Benghazi attack. Do you think that the president actually is doing this deliberately to sucker the Republicans into a confrontation that he thinks he can win?
No, I think, first of all, I don't know what he's doing, and we won't know until he starts doing it. If he behaves as he did in the first term, he will be confrontational because it's who he is, not because he's clever, but because he, in fact, wants a very left-wing system. He wants a very left-wing foreign policy. He wants a very weak left-wing national security program, and that's who he really is. And he probably feels vindicated right now. I mean, his getting reelected by the margin he got reelected by, given the economy, given all the other things, has to be interpreted by him as a validation of trying to take America to the left and trying to change us in profound, fundamental ways. That's part of why, from day one, I think Republicans have to be very careful in wanting to cooperate but not to sell out.